actually be done in two sessions, but that was silly. But it will be done in four because next week is a special session. We've gone through the discussions in the Gemara as well as that debate between the Rashba and the Rush about davening, saying brachos, learning Torah in a space that is unclean. And we defined unclean as being that there is excrement there, potentially urine, or there is equipment that is used to handle those things that isn't cleanable, or there's a foul smell. And we talked about the need for satisfying the Torah's imperative of, first of all, that Yuhaya Machanecha Kadosh, your camp shall be holy, meaning that you should not have something unclean in the space where you are davening. We also talked about the application of the pasuk v'lo yir'ebecha ervaz davar, the idea that that which is normally covered should remain covered, and you shouldn't be able to see it when you are davening. And the application of that not only to skin, but the application of that to these kinds of unclean items. And we moved into the application phase after we did all of this in the Gemara and the what it means to cover it and so on. We last time we dealt with it on the Shulchan Aruch level, and then we moved into some of the modern circumstances. You made it. We moved into some of the modern circumstances in the Nishmas Avram. So last time round we talked about vomit that doesn't have a smell is just disgusting, or the possibility of thick phlegm as an issue. And actually, I had a question that came up for myself afterwards, and put it to some rabbis on a WhatsApp group. Didn't really see an answer that I felt addressed it. Prognosia. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that properly, but it's the phenomenon of phantom smells, which apparently has some prevalence in the COVID, post-COVID era. People who months after getting COVID will find, instead of the phenomenon of losing their sense of smell, they find that they smell things when there's nothing there. And unfortunately, the thing that they smell can be something foul. So my thought was, are they able to daven? Is that different from what we called reach she'ein lo ikar, where there's a smell but there's no substance there? And we said that while you're smelling it, you're not able to daven. So if somebody has this, where this smell is, for whatever reason, being triggered in his brain, is he now unable to daven?
Before COVID, there was a condition that was caused by a tumor in the olfactory groove.
Yeah.
Which would give people smells that were very unpleasant.
So that would
it would be a red flag to a neurologist if someone came in with that story to look for a tumor.
Fascinating. So that question would pertain. So somebody wanted to argue, there is a Mishnah Berurah who quotes the Chaye Adam to say that all of these things about bad smells are really rooted in decomposition. Something is decomposing, and that's what triggers all of these halachos. And they argued here, nothing is decomposing. My response is, number one, we saw the Aruch HaShulchan who talked about thick phlegm, which has nothing to do with decomposition. It's just something that's revolting. That's number one. And number two, maybe it's about your subjective experience, not what it's objectively what it is, but rather it's what you experience. If you smell something that's decomposing, what's the difference between that? And there is something decomposing that you happen to smell. As long as the smell you have is a smell associated with the decomposition, maybe this would in fact be a problem. I don't know. If Tova wrote in the chat, phantasmia. Why did I think it was prognosia? I have no idea. Okay, thank you. There were two different words. One was that you smell things that are good, but you smell them differently, and the other one is that you smell something that isn't there. But I'll take phantasmia. Thank you, Tova.
Parosmia is where it smells different.
Parosmia. Okay, so there's parosmia where it smells different, and there's phantasmia where it's just a smell out of nowhere.
Every case we have quoted so far has a substance. There is no substance here.
Well, no.
There's no substance. Not even decay. I'm saying substance. You have to have a substance that's creating this.
But it wasn't so. We had the case of Reach Rasha Ein Lo Iker, where there is nothing that is the root of it. There's methane gas. There's no, it's not coming from anywhere.
Well, gas is a substance.
Ah, so gas is a substance. That's
there's
interesting.
No substance that's creating this.
That's right, interesting.
It's not phenomenon.
Yeah.
I was going to say also that there may be actually a smell there, like there's something that's stimulating the nose to create the smell where this is just imagined. So maybe that's
right. So
than amyl ether.
I don't know. I don't know the science of it.
Doesn't it have to do with interfering with your concentration? If it was a fantasy smell and something smelled terrible to me, but there's nothing there, it was like crazy, it smells great to us, what if I couldn't tell them because it's bothering me so much?
So the problem is that this really has objective and subjective components, right? Like we talked about the fact that if somebody is davening in a space where they can't see the stuff, but a person with regular vision could, then it's a problem. So there's an objective component and a subjective component. So I don't know. I thought it was a very interesting question that I hope will not ever arise la halacha.
Could you solve this problem by having that person walk elsewhere? And if objectively something's going on in their nose and they keep smelling something, then maybe they can't dive at all anywhere.
But that was my question. My question is somebody, I don't know if you were here when I started to frame it. The question was somebody who has this COVID-related phenomenon in which they smell things that are not there, and it smells foul to them, and nobody else has any idea what they're talking about.
It's a neurologic phenomenon. Neurologic.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so in any case, the first case that we're going to look at in the Nishmas Avram today is the issue of the hospital curtains, the curtains in a hospital room between beds. And what happens if in one bed there is indeed a problem, and then you have the curtain in between beds, and then somebody's in the next bed, is that person able to daven? So this is in the Nishmas Avram, and I gave you the reference on the sheet. If you're using the second edition PDF, you want page 117 for the start of it. He has a nice long discussion. We're going to skip a little piece of it, or some parts of it, but overall, we're going to have to see his discussion. He's commenting on Orach Chaim Siman Pei Zayin, where they talk about davening in a space that has tzoa, but you distance yourself from it, or you have mechitza between you and it. So that's where the Nishmas Avram makes his comment. Since people have joined, I'm going to make sure to repost the link so that you can download the Nishmas Avram. Shehir, he says, his first, I'll orient us a little bit to what he's going to do. He's going to deal with three issues. First issue is, can you consider the curtain in the hospital room to be a mechitza? So it's like a wall. It's not, therefore, in your, this stuff is not in your machaneh. His second approach is going to be to say, even if it doesn't constitute machaneh, it may still constitute kisui. It is a cover for the stuff. And then he's going to say, even if it doesn't constitute, then he's going to have a third point. This is a different element within it, which is, even if you do have a barrier, what if the smell crosses the barrier? What are your options? You may say, well, I have a wall between me and it, but I'm smelling it. So now what? So we have to talk about all three of those elements here. So the first part, viewing it as a mechitza, is meant to take advantage of the rule of the Hayah Machanecha Kadosh, your Machaneh shall be Kadosh. If it's behind the Machitza, it's not in your Machaneh. It's in a different space altogether. It's not in your camp at all. So he says, Vim Haisa Babayis Mita Gevo Hayud. He first talks about it not in terms of a curtain, but in terms of a bed itself constituting an interruption. So he says, if you had a bed that's 10 tefach high, and the walls of the bed reach the ground, we call it stadim, on all sides. In other words, this is not just a standard bed, a frame, right? But it actually has walls. Or alternatively, you have a bed with very short legs, so that the mattress or box spring or whatever it is that's on the bottom is within 3 tefach of the ground, and therefore 3 tefach is about 11 inches, so you cancel out that space that's below it because it's less than 3 tefach, and the bed itself, the body of the bed, the mattress, the whatever it is, reaches 10 tefach high. Vitzoa agraf ve'avid omid me'achorei hamita, and on the other side of this bed, there's excrement, or there's a bedpan, Mikri hamita machitza. So the bed is called a machitza. Vishari likros lefnei hamita ve'enu tzarech laharchik. And you're allowed to read on the other side of the bed. You do not need to distance yourself. Ubilvad shelo yir'es hagraf. As long as you don't see the stuff. Vegam shelo yagia lo ruach ra. And you don't have a bad smell. However, he says, umitos shalanu, our beds, avopishen gvoos yutfachim, even though they are 10 tefach tall, lo hava machitza lahafsik, they won't constitute an interruption, ki ein braglein rochav dalet tfachim, because he says, first of all, the legs are not 4 tefach wide, that's its own discussion, ubederach klal, ein lehen machitzos amagios laaretz, otoch gimel tfachim min haaretz, you also don't have walls, there's no wall dropping down from a bed, like in a hospital.
Like it that hangs over the edge.
So that's a good question. We're going to come back to that. He says, therefore, this doesn't count and you need to distance yourself from it. So Michael's question of what if a blanket hangs down, could that constitute a wall, is going to come back to us. We're going to talk about the difference between hospital curtains, which are just hanging from a rod, but there's nothing anchoring them at the bottom, versus where they're actually tied to something. And is there a need that they should be tied at the bottom? And that will determine whether this blanket can work also. So we'll get to that.
I think functionally in hospitals, they don't tie them because they open and close. You know, they use them to...
I mean, you could theoretically have them on a track where it's attached to a track at the bottom and top and you can still open and close it. But yeah, I don't think that normally... The ones that I'm familiar with certainly do not.
And also, even if you say that it's good to hang, how it doesn't reach the floor.
Well, it has to be within 3 tefach on the floor. 11 inches. That could be.
Most of them are hanging.
So, I mean, we'll see. We're going to get to that. So, number one, we've said the bed theoretically could, but it's not common. You know, unless we're going to rig it, like with a blanket or something like that. That's not the normal bed situation. So then he goes on and he quotes a bir halacha, quoting the Chaye Adam, giving dimensions of the mechitza, of the barrier that you need. And he says, Kasav a bir halacha b'shem Chaye Adam. Teva ha'omed b'bayis. Let's say you have a box in a house, and you want the box to constitute the interruption. Gavoa asara tfachim, it's 10 tefach tall. V'racha b'meshech arba tfachim, and it is 4 tefach wide. Hamavsik bein ha'adam letzoa, and it's between the person and the stuff. Yesh lahachmer kedas hamagin avram. De'avo b'kein osur elim kein mavsik mikosel lekosel. He says you should be strict like the Magen Avraham to say it has to go from one wall to the other wall in order to constitute a mechitza. Mechitza does not mean there's a space here and then you could just look around it. Mechitza means it goes from wall to wall. Without weighing in on the question of is this true for all halachos that require mechitzos, but that's what the Magen Avraham says here. This goes back to the discussion we had last week or the week before about the difference between soa that's behind a barrier and soa that's inside a kli, like inside a lantern. So he's viewing this mechitza that doesn't reach the walls as not really being a mechitza. It is still useful, though, for certain circumstances. Aval, imhaya meiraglayim al haaretz, if there's urine on the ground, and by saying it's on the ground, what he means is it's only a derabanan. It's not the urine that's a deoraisa issue, where it's a stream. O bechli she'eno gram. Or there's the urine is in a vessel, but it's not a graf. It's not a bedpan. It's not something that's used normally for holding this. Benyin she'en bo'al isa derabanan. So there's only a rabbinic prohibition against davening there. Nirali demutar lamo negen amachitza v'lekros olavarech. So all you have to do is position yourself so that this box, this mechitza, is between you and the stuff. As long as you can't see it, since it's only a derabanan, we're going to rely on this, because it's a derabanan in the first place. And yes, the Magen Avraham doesn't like it, but if it's a derabanan, I don't have to satisfy everybody. I just need to satisfy somebody. That's the idea. Avalo keneged ha'avir demechitza rechavar ba'atvachim chashim mechitza lahatir keneged. He says not opposite the air, but opposite the mechitza, because a mechitza that's 4 tefach wide counts at least to permit when you're davening opposite the mechitza. And not only that, he says, v'im ha'machitza hi yoser min ha'avir davi omei merubah ha'parot, he borrows an Erevin concept. In the event that the mechitza is actually enough of the width of the space, that it is the majority and it's just the minority that's open space, So I could view it as canceling out the open space. And he says, Nirali dafilu b'tzawa yesh lahatir b'sha'as adchak neged hamachitza. Then if you're really stuck and there's actual excrement there, so it's a de'oraisa, I would rely on a machitza like that. Ubevad shelo yera hatzawa, as long as you can't see the stuff. This is all the bir halacha, the Chafetz Chaim, in other words, usually the Chafetz Chaim, quoting the Chayei Adam. Od kasav, and then he brings one more piece from the Chayei Adam. The mechitza has to be 10 tefach tall. Berochav arba tefach min hakarka ad sof gova yotfachim. It has to be 4 tefach wide that it has the 10 tefach height. It can't be that it's 10 tefach here and then it drops down and then it comes back up and it drops back down. You need 4 tefach in width that's actually 10 tefach tall. Oh, aval pi shepachos migimel tefachim samach lekarka ein baruch of dalid kagon shomedes al raglayim dakim damrin and lavud aval shulchan shalanu kayotze bo shomed al raglayim beibrach baruch of dalid tefachim al pi shein gvoen asar tefachim lohavi mechitza lahavsik. He goes on to say, at the very least, you need that it should be within 3 tefach of the ground and reaching 10 tefach at a 4 tefach width. That's okay as well. As opposed to, he says, our tables aren't going to be any good because the legs of our tables are not 4 tefach wide. So you don't have a space that's 4 tefach wide and 10 tefach tall. That was,
you can't use good argument.
So he referred to regarding the bed also. Sorry?
You can't use good argument.
No, that's not going to help me. This is not a sukkah. We need a real barrier.
You could ask Michael's question about a court.
Right, so we're going to get to that. That's that we're getting to. So he's defined for us the type of barrier that we need. 10 tefach tall could be something that doesn't quite reach the ground, as long as it's within 3 tefach of the ground, with a 4 tefach width. And even if it doesn't go wall to wall, and it's not even the majority of the width of the space, that's good enough for a derabanan, as long as I'm not looking at whatever this derabanan thing is. And in a case of need, I could rely for a de'oraisa in the event that the majority of the width of the area is covered with this mechitza and ignore the minority part again, as long as I can't see this stuff and I can't smell it.
What if you could mask the smell? You know the smell is...
We're getting there. That's the third topic that I mentioned, the issue of what if the smell crosses the barrier. We're going to talk about deodorizers. Yeah, that will be part of the conversation. Okay. So he then continues to talk about the concept of mechitza hamateres. We're now going to veer into a left field. In the chat, Leah wrote about a pedestal table with a wide pedestal. I don't know what that means. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the term pedestal table.
Maybe it's got like a center column, which is holding the table up.
Oh, I see.
Wide.
So it's just a question.
One post in the middle.
One post in the middle. Okay. So I've seen tables like that. I didn't realize that was the term. So it just depends on the dimensions, right? You need to know that you have 4 tefach wide and 10 tefach tall at the spot of the pedestal. 4 tefach in width is, a significant width. I mean, you're by Rav Moshe's standard, which is a relatively Mekel standard, that's 14.4 inches plus change. So that's pretty wide. He moves into the area of mechitza hamateres. So mechitza hamateres is a different halacha, but it will have elements that are shared here. Mechitza hamateres literally means a mechitza to permit use of a space. And the origin of it is another indelicate topic, which is that men and women are not supposed to engage in relations in a room that is lit, in a room where there is light. They are not saying that it has to be pitch black, but it should not be a room that's lit up so that people can see well. So the question arises, what if it's Shabbos and there's a candle in the space? What are they now supposed to do? So they want to put a barrier in front of the candle. So that's called mechitza hamateres, a mechitza which will permit you to use the space for this purpose. That's the idea. And there's a rule that says you're not allowed to set up a mechitza hamateres on Shabbos. That's bona, it's construction. You're constructing a barrier that is meaningful. We're going to talk about that application here, but we have a while till we get to that. Right now, he's just borrowing from the concept of mechitza amateres to get into the question of anchoring the bottom of the mechitza. That's why this is borrowed here. So he says, if you're following along inside the Nishmas Avram, where you have the number 1, mechitza amateres, Lachain, he says, therefore, mechitza materes, a mechitza that permits use of a space. Dehainu, shematiro lo la'adam lasok bidvarm shebekidusha yidei zeh shemasiga beino lebein tsoa. In our case, it is a mechitza that permits you to do holy things in this space because it interrupts between you and this stuff. Bizman she'ein reach ra magia elav, and there's no bad smell getting to you. So tzricho lios begova shalafachos asar tfachim berochav arba tfachim. Just like we have already said, it has to be 10 tefach tall, 4 tefach wide. Utzricha lios chazaka, and it has to be strong. Bemida maspekes shetucha lamod beruach mitzuya, strong enough that it could stand in a normal wind. I don't know where he got that idea from. This is not a sukkah, right? Sukkah, we talk about it being like a house and all of that. Where does this come from? I'm not clear. I don't know. I didn't research it. However, this seems to be the definition of mechitza. Sorry?
Meniach tzom l'dir.
Okay.
So there was a ruach she'eino seruya, or a ruach seruya.
That's a nezek discussion.
Yeah.
This is what he's saying is, your mechitza has to stand in a common wind in order for it to qualify as a mechitza.
There are no other units of halachic units of measurements of strength. That's the only thing we have.
Yeah, but why do I have any requirement of strength? So he says, Kigon vilon shetzarech lios mechubar hein b'katzeyu ha'elyon v'hein b'katzeyu ha'tachton o mechitza miskapelas b'soch misgeres. So he says, therefore, I'm going to need either a curtain that is anchored top and bottom, or I'm going to need some kind of a folding barrier, you know, there's a word for it that I'm not thinking of right now, a partition, like a foldable partition that you can roll out into the space, something like that. Omnum. However, he says, I'm going to give you a kula. I was kind of surprised. I thought someone was going to say this very before. But he says, Omnam bishvil beit hacholim lahavdil beimita lamita ulay yesh lesmoch ala chazonish. He says, for the hospital, dividing between beds, maybe you could rely on the chazonish, who said, dibebayis lo bo'inan kshira kevan she'ein ruach. You don't need to tie it if it's indoors because there's no wind indoors. Nothing's blowing down the curtain between the beds. Yes. The ulahakel is right. Ulahakel is palal sham, and therefore you could be lenient to daven there. Don't start trouble, Sana, please. The ubelvad shavilonia gia ad laaretz a samach laaretz talk about tefachim. It just has to reach the ground or reach within three tefach of the ground, and we'll be fine. And then he adds, the kasav li mori rabbi Rabbi Shua Neuvert ein haikar mechubar ela sharuach lo yecholala haziza. He says we're not really saying it has to be anchored. That was never the requirement. Even forget the chazanish. That was not the requirement. All the requirement was that the wind would not blow it. That's all. It shouldn't move in the breeze. V'machmas kovet avilon in a roch mezizo gam shapir dami. And therefore, if you have a curtain that's not anchored, but it's heavy enough that it doesn't get blown this way and that, that will already be sufficient.
So maybe it's not a completely random arbitrary measurement. Because you are concerned about the transmission of odors from one side to the other. So
yeah, but this isn't odor dependent. This has nothing to do with.
I understand, but you're in the parsha.
Yes.
Of keeping things separate.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Maybe what you're concerned with is maintaining the space. You're defining the space, mm-hmm. and if the definition of the space is this is the curtain, and the curtain is moving, then the
right.
space is less defined.
If this is a space and the curtain is defining the space, so then it needs to be defining the space and not be moving. Maybe.
Well,
I hear the argument.
Getting back to sukkah.
Yes, in a sense. I guess so.
Which, to a certain degree, makes sense.
Yeah.
It's about
a wall. If the wind blows it in, it's not a wall. That's why we have to have a levud.
Right. So this is where we are at the moment. I just want to jump for a second. If you go further down, we're at number two, Vilon, but I want to jump to where it says, V'kasav li hagon Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, that's all. Okay, so you're jumping, you're up to Vilon, then the next paragraph starts with V'kasav li hagon or Shlomo Zalman, and then Gam Shamati, and then the one after that. V'kasav li. Okay, you see it? It's on the next page? Okay. V'kasav li hagon Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg. The Tzitz Eliezer wrote to me, Shiesh lahatir, that you could also permit in the curtain case, Ki yeshno ala vilona ze din shel mechitza ma'ateres ava pi she'eino magia l'toch gimel tefachim me'haritzpa. He says that your curtain doesn't actually need to reach 3 tefach from the floor. Why not? Because he says your concern is about stuff that's on a bed. Right? That's your issue. So the curtain just needs to conceal the bed. That's all you have to worry about. So he says, v'zeh l'shono. Dehare zeh mekubal al kulanu hachraso shel haChazanish. He says, first of all of us accept the Chazanish's statement. Shesover shebesoch bayis ein tzarech shetiyah mechitza mechuberes gam b'kteh atachtam. That indoors, we don't need the mechitza to be connected, attached at the bottom. Asher be'etzem anu motzim she'ekronit sovrim b'kazos gam halachos ketanos. He says the halachos ketanos already said this in the time of the Gaonim, brought in the Be'er Heitev. V'kach mevi b'sefer pischei tshuva, or chayim reish mem, b'shem shudol ha'shmuel. Dekevan she'omei b'bayis she'ein sham ruach lo ba'inan hiduk. It's indoors, there's no need to attach it. That's first of all. He says we're all good with the Chazon Ish. V'yotze, and what emerges, is the hachisaron shebevilon zehu rak mipnei she'inenu magia l'toch gimel tvachem meharitzpa. The only problem I have then is that this curtain doesn't reach within 3 tefach of the ground. Vimke nero lomar shachisaron hu rak l'gabe l'mata me'amita. So he says the only thing you really need is that it should go below the bed. Aval hamita k'shela atzma kein moel vilon kazeh. He says, yeah, if it doesn't reach that low to the ground, so you have a problem in terms of the space that's on the ground, that's below the bed. But for the bed itself, you're fine. V'nikra l'gabeha shapir b'shem mechitza hamateres. As far as the bed is concerned, this is called mechitza hamateres. Dehare amita shachola shochev oleha im avilona parus oleha magia gov haliyos me'asar tefachim. Because the bed, combined with the curtain, is 10 tefach high. Urachava harehu b'stama yos me'arba tefachim. Presumably it's wider than 4 tefach. And the bottom of the curtain presumably is going to reach the bottom of the mattress. Certainly within 3 tefach of it. So the bed is considered its own rishus. And the curtain is considered a machitza that permits. The only thing you haven't covered is the space that's underneath the bed, but everything else you're actually taken care of. So Tzitz Eliezer says you don't need to reach the floor, you don't need to reach within 3 tefach of the floor, you just need to reach the level of the bed, which is where the stuff is.
Is that because it's a kisui or because it's making it a separate room?
So right now, making it a separate room, this is mechitza. We're going to get to kisui next. Right now, he is viewing this
but
as
is it really a separate room if you don't have a mechitza below it?
Yes. He's arguing yes.
I understand he's arguing that, but does anybody disagree with that?
The Nishmas Avram does not quote anybody disagreeing. I mean, it's a chiddush, and all the others who dealt with the hospital room issue, like Rav Neuwirth, who he mentioned before, like Rav Shlomo Zalman, don't offer this as a suggestion. So maybe that says something.
Right.
I know. Okay.
We're talking here where the waste is on the bed as opposed to, let's say, in a bag.
So I was actually, that's the way I first framed it, but now I'm actually thinking you don't even need that. As long as the person wants to daven is on a bed and the mechitza is for his bed, maybe that is already sufficient.
So the guy on the other side of the curtain has the stuff. You're on the other side, on this side of the curtain, sitting on your bed.
You're in your own space. Maybe that even works. Right? So no matter where the tzawa is, it's the other side of the curtain. I can't see what's on the other side of the curtain.
It's
out of my mouth.
Let's say it's on the floor.
Yeah, even if it's on the floor.
Does the curtain have to be pulled all the way? Because the way it works in hospitals is it's a semicircle.
Right.
Okay? So you could pull it halfway, or you could pull it all the way in a semicircle.
So right now, what we're talking about, what we're trying to do, is the mechitza going from one end all the way to the other. Right? We did say before that there's the possibility that it doesn't qualify as a mechitza because it's not wide enough. But if what's on the other side of the mechitza is a derabanan, right, like urine that's not in a bedpan, and you can't see it, you are part of you are blocked by it, then that's already going to be sufficient. But now we're going to come back to your question because there's another way to look at it. I said this already when I introduced it. There's another way to look at all of this. Yeah, Jeff. Okay. The The second way to look at it is kisui. Because we did say in the Gemara, this is why it's important that we saw the Gemara first, we saw this idea that if the tsawa is covered, even if it's not in a different space, you're okay. We quoted the pasuk, v'shavta v'chisisa es tseyasecha. The Torah says, you shall cover up this stuff, and that already allows you to daven. You don't need to be in a different space. So maybe the curtain that doesn't extend wide enough or isn't anchored or whatever to be called a mechitza still qualifies as a kisui. Take a look. Now go back to the paragraph that starts with the number 2. That's where he brings this. He's quoting Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Vilon. Bibatei cholim, b'makom she'ein avilon magia l'soch gimel tfachim meharitzpa. You have this curtain in a hospital, in a space where the curtain does not reach 3 tefach to the ground, so it's not low enough. Do you have it?
Is it before or after?
Before where we are. Before.
Before.
Yeah. This is what we had skipped from.
Page 118, if you have it by page.
Thanks. 118 for those who are working with the PDF.
Number 2 on the right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm. Go around.
Okay. So he says, Yielech ora aser lihispala lo lilmod v'chulei. If it doesn't reach the ground, or within 3 tefach of the ground, it would seem you wouldn't be able to daven, or learn Torah. Im b'tzad ha'sheni shel havilon, yesh grafim tzawa o avitim meraglayim. If on the other side, there's stuff. Ach shamati me'agon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach zatzal. But I heard from Rav Shlomo Zalman. Shek, quote, Omnam ein levilon kazeh din shel mechitza materes. Granted, this curtain is not called a mechitza materes. Ach nirish shebecholzos yela din shel kisui, but it will be a cover. Kavilon lemaisa mechas es hagraf, because the curtain does cover up this pile. O es haavit, or the bedpan, mein a komishin imtza betzada sheni shelah, from the eyes of anybody on the other side. Velochein mitam ze yemutu lechola hanimtza betzada ze lihispalel, so the patient on the other side could daven. Kol shelo magia lo reyach ra meatzava o hashes, and again, assuming he's not smelling anything. Ad kan devarav, end of quote from Rav Shlomo Zalman. And now the Nishmas Avram says, I have a support for this from the Eishel Avram. Re'e be'eishel Avram buchach, right? There are 2 Eishel Avrams. There's the Eishel Avram that is one part of the Prima Gadim, and then there's a standalone Eishel Avram of Rav Avram David of Buchach. So this is the latter Eishel Avram. Shekosev, he wrote, Ma she'ein nachon lasas mechitza b'shabes kodesh, k'shim mitztareches laheter. When we say that on Shabbos you're not allowed to create a mechitza to permit a space, ulai bekisui tzawa lo shayach kein. That may not be relevant when you're dealing with covering up the excrement. Ukmo shemuter lachasos kein kishos a mechitza vayedeze mechusa legamri eno signon mechitza rakisui. He says, look, no one is going to tell you that you're not allowed to put a cover on excrement, right? Imagine if there's a little bit of it on the ground, right? And you want to be able to daven in the space, and you're going to drop a napkin on it. No one's going to say, well, that's boneh, right? Is it mevatal kli mehechano? That's a discussion. That's a mukta discussion. But it's not going to be a problem of boneh to do that. So set up your curtain in a way that it's a kisui. It's a cover. Covering something is fine.
Does it have to literally cover it, as in be on top of it, or
no? Just that you can't see it
anywhere. So halachically, what is the definition of a kisui? It's just blocking your view.
Yes.
What if you put the blinders on your eyes? Is that a kisui?
Yes. That's what it sounds like. No.
It sounds like a stretch.
Okay.
Because you're covering your eyes, you're not covering the tzoa.
Right. So as of now, he has not given us any kind of definition of what qualifies as a kisui. He hasn't said. He has just said it may not be a mechitza. And what he's basing it on, the Eishel Avram is not interested in giving us dimensions. The point of the Eishel Avram is a completely separate conversation. The Eishel Avram's point is simply to say that there may be circumstances where something is not a mechitza, but it is a kisui. That's all the Eishel Avram is doing. And he's borrowing that and saying, ha, you could do that here. It doesn't qualify as a mechitza, but it qualifies as a kisui. We haven't given anything in terms of definition of what you need. We will get a little bit coming up, I think. So he says, V'shamati mimor v'rabi yagon rav noivert shlita. Rav Neuver thought that we could bring a proof to support what Rav Shlomo Zalman said. I think we have a basis to support what he said from the Mishnah Brura talking about the cover in front of a candle. Man, Mishnah Brura Shekosev, Mishnah Brura writes, he said, you're not allowed to make a barrier in front of the candle. This is a permitting mechitza. However, if the mechitza covers the entire flame to the point where it's not visible, it doesn't need to be 10 tefach tall, as long as the candle is covered. So in that case, it's not a mechitza. This is the Mishnah Brura talking. It's not a mechitza. It's just a cover. Therefore, even if it is 10 tefach high, you're still okay. It's not a mechitza. It's a kisui. Poof. You thought it was a mechitza, but it's not. It's actually a kisui.
So according to him, if you put a book in front of the candle, you've accomplished everything without making a mechitza.
Well, as of now, it sure sounds like it. He has not given me dimensions in any way. Yeah, we're going to see more in this next paragraph, but that's what it sounds like.
What would you say about a kosher lamb?
So what? What's your problem? You've got a
you had a question with bonehead.
Bonehead, you're doing good.
But it's not, because you're not putting up a mechitza that's 10 tefach tall and 3 tefach and 4 tefach wide. Yeah, that's for sure not bona. No one was going to call that bona. Let me make sure I'm saying this clearly. The only time bona is an issue is if you build a halachic mechitza, 10 tefach wide, 10 tefach tall, 4 tefach wide. What he's trying to tell you here is that something doesn't need to function as a mechitza, something can function as a kisui. In which case, no issue of bona is relevant. That's his whole point.
Okay, so if in the case we discussed, the case of a man and wife, if you have a light on in a closet, and the door is open, let's assume for this conversation that door is
10 tefach wide. Yeah.
Okay. Are you allowed to? But there's light coming in from the closet.
Yeah. So I think it's fine because a door on a hinge is not an act of bona when you simply swing the door on the hinge.
Same way the curtain, but if you pull, you're pulling.
And right. We're talking about setting one up. There's a difference between setting up mechitza and wheeling it over. Wheeling it over is not the same thing.
But that would be like Hebrew wheeling an existing mechitza over.
I would think.
Okay. So if you had like a bar and you throw a blanket over the bar.
Now you have a problem.
Then you have a problem. Because you're taking some, there's no mechitza in existence, and now there is one.
Correct.
Or if you actually take a door that's not attached and kind of move it in front.
Right? Correct. So he then says, Rav Shlomo Zalman did not like that proof. We thought that was a pretty good support for the idea that there's such a thing as a kisui that's not a machitza. He says, don't bring a proof from that. Because of the Gaon Rav Shlomo Zalman or Bach Tzal. Misvara nira levini is daiti kemosha amarti. He says, what I said, that it can operate as a kisui if not a machitza, I think is logically correct. As ha'ova avilo nasa rak l'shem hafrada, since the curtain is only set up as an interruption, a barrier, v'kumo ba'ol tzanua v'nifrad mikol ha'anashim, it's like he's in a private space, separate from anybody else. V'lechora mitzad ha'seichel harei ze kil tfei mitzoh ha'munachas al davar shegavo ha'asara. He says, this is even more lenient than the case that we mentioned, I think, last week. We said, if there were a case in which the tzoa was up on an elevated surface that was 10 tefach up from the ground. So he said that's like a different rishus. We were willing to consider that a different rishus. So he said, if you're willing to consider that a different rishus, then when it's behind a curtain that happens not to be 4 tefach wide, that should also, be affected. If the fact that it's sitting up there is okay, then the fact that it's behind the curtain is also okay, assuming that ain reach ra, assuming that there's no bad smell. Fine. But he says, don't bring me proofs from that Mishnah Brura about candles. That's a different story. The rules for that candle are different. That's different from when there's excrement in the same space. Don't bring me any proofs from the candle to this discussion. I'm not going to go through that in depth. But he doesn't think you should prove it from there. Bottom line, though, is that he's okay with the curtain as a kisui, if not as a machitza. Last question in this, the question that Dr. Block asked before. So what if there is a smell? Right? What if there's a smell that crosses the barrier? Now what do you do? So he has this in two different spaces. One is the space we're up to now. If you see the paragraph that starts, Gam Shamati, this is his first point of where he discusses it. And he quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman and he quotes Rav Neuwirth. And they do not like spray deodorizers. They're not a fan. Gam Shamati, so to speak, Gam Shamati Megun Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Zatzal Shekozman Shenimtza Hagraf or Hara'eh. As long as the stuff is there, or the kli that held it, the vessel that held it is there. Ve'ekev ze yesh reyach ra b'cheder, and as a result, there's a bad smell in the room. Aser l'ispa'al, you may not daven. Afilu ma'avirim es hareach, ayudei risus shabosem, and even if they spray some kind of a perfume in the room, that is insufficient. Ve'hosef li mo'i v'rabi ha'gon Rav Yeshua Neuwirth shlita, ki arei dino kidin tzawa sheyesh bo mamash. He said, this is the rule of excrement where there's a physical thing there, and the rule is you have to distance yourself 4 amos from the place where the smell ends. It doesn't matter if you don't smell it. You sprayed something, and therefore your nose is now taken up with this perfume. But that doesn't mean that there's no smell, it just means that you don't smell it. And he quotes you a number of achronim to support this. Kavachayim, Ben Yishchayim, Mekor Chayim, Tzitz Eliezer, Minchas Yitzchak. So they are not comfortable with this. The Tzitz Eliezer, though, is lenient with deodorizer for two reasons. So now you have to jump to much further along. After, in your text, does it have like an area with a different font?
Yeah.
Okay, after that, right after the, where the different font ends. He has this whole piece from the Binyan Shlomo that I'm skipping. Umamshich, correct.
120
in the PDF, thank you. Umamshich Hagon Rav Waldenberg, b'mechtavo elai. Rav Waldenberg, in his letter to me, continued to say, b'nogeya l'risus imbosem k'sheyesh reach me'agraf, as far as spraying this perfume when there's a smell from the stuff, shemikeven sheledaito yesh al havilon din shal mechitza hamateres, since he takes the view that the curtain is considered a machitza because of the bed, right? Because of this, because it reaches the height of the bed, correct, thanks. Nechshav az kibahareach merishus acheres. So we view the smell as something that is coming from a different domain altogether. Umahani ha'avaras hareach leidei pizur bosem, and therefore spraying the perfume is going to be acceptable. The umam shechagon shlita, and then the Tzitz Eliezer continues to say, bar mindain, aside from that point, yu'uyan b'sifri, read my book, buy my book and read it. Tzitz Eliezer, yud beis, shehevesi mikama gedolei aposkim, I brought from various great poskim, brackets, he gives you a couple of sources, desvira lahu sheyesh bitul l'reach ra al yedei mugmer shal besamim b'chol gavna, v'afilu b'rishus achas. He says, it's not everybody agrees that spraying perfume is ineffective. Even though it's true that we say that if the smell is there and you happen to not smell it, that's not good enough. They view the perfume as canceling out the presence of the bad smell. The bad smell isn't there at all.
Practically, the biggest problem is the smell. And a lot of times we do have, when there's a smell in a room, we have this green stuff, right? You pull out with the wick, right? And it really does kill the smell.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I mean, you may smell the green stuff, which is, you know, not disturbing to you.
Yeah.
But you don't smell the tzoa.
Yeah.
And practically, that's what's going to happen to everybody in a four-bedded room in a hospital.
I would think.
Is the mitzvah that the graf is still there, but you're covering with them, as opposed to...
Right. This is reach rasha yesh lo ikar. Yeah. Yeah, there's stuff there. If it was reach rasha ein lo ikar, then you don't need to be 4 amos away from where the smell ends, right? It just has to be that you don't smell it, and maybe there's room for leniency as well.
Because like when it's just like a... You could argue that when there's just a smell that's permeating the air, but there's no ikar there, then the perfume, deodorizer,
yeah,
you could argue, really does take
correct
away, changes the materials of the smell.
It's an argument,
but
for sure.
But if the graf is still there, it's more difficult to make that argument,
right,
because... The stuff that smells is still there.
It must be so made on sits Eliezer, because there's no way you can daven. You can daven in a room.
Right. It may. It definitely creates a challenge.
Room, the odds are against you. Odds are against you.
Yeah. No. It's true. I understand.
Sometimes you have to get in the hallway.
I
want
to
go
back to your question.
One other. Right. Right. One other issue.
Well, closing your eyes.
Closing your eyes doesn't work.
No, not for the smell.
No, no, but for the kisui also. No.
No, no, but putting blinders on.
No, not for the smell, but like you're not supposed to see. So if I know davening off by heart, and I know exactly but I don't see it.
No, that doesn't work, unfortunately.
Because
there's nothing, because you need something objective that is blocking it. It's not about you yourself. Yeah.
It's not a question of knowledge, of knowing what's going on. Okay.
Yeah, no, that won't help. One other issue that I bring up largely because we've discussed it before, it came up in the series, it doesn't have direct relevance here, although it could, is the issue of the Persian bathroom. There is a halacha that one is not allowed to daven next to a bathroom. I'm talking about an open door. If everything is closed, that's a different story. But if you have a bathroom with an open door, that is a problem. If you take a look on the sheet, the separate sheet. I gave you the Gemara Brachos Daf Chavav Amud Aleph. Kama Yarchik Mehen Umin Hatzoa. This is familiar to us. We've seen this before. How far? I didn't number the sources on this. I should have. How far do you have to distance yourself from excrement? Arba Amos, four Amos. Then you have the discussion, four amos if it's behind you, if it's in front of you and you can see it, you still have a problem. And then the Gemara asks, Ini, is that so? V'ha'amar rafam bar papa amar v'chizda omeid adam k'neged beis ha'kisei u'mispalel. He says, what do you mean? We learned you're allowed to stand opposite a washroom and daven. So the Gemara gives you a first answer, which it's going to reject. The first answer is, it's talking about a bathroom that has no excrement in it. To which the Gemara says, no, bathrooms are a problem even if there currently is no excrement in it, right? Just like we talked about the bedpan being a problem, and how could this be any different? So they reject that answer. Then they give a second answer and say, it's about a new one that's never been used. Someone asked me, someone asked me a few weeks ago, what if about
urinals that they were never used?
That they were never used, right.
Packed in plastic, ready to
use. So that's an answer. Where they're new, b'chadati. And then a third answer, Amar Rava. Rava says, this is a different kind of bathroom. Hani bate kisoi de parsoi. These are Persian bathrooms. Afagav de ispahutsoa kistumin damu. Even though there's stuff in them, they're considered like they are sealed up. What is this about? So Rashi gives you the view that is the dominant view. This is the view that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, which is Bechafira Hayu. This was a hole they dug. Upiem berachok min haguma v'hu b'shipua. But the way that they did it was that the hole was dug on a slant, and the top of the hole was very far from the bottom of the hole. V'harei misgal gel v'nofel aguma. So the stuff is going to roll all the way down, and at that point it is out of sight, and because of the construction, the smell perhaps will not waft up in the same way. It'll be trapped down there. So Rashi says, therefore, you're allowed to daven even though the door to this bathroom is open. That's Rashi. The Meiri has a different idea. The Meiri says, it's the next one, Beis HaBechira, Batei Kisos HaStumin. They're sealed. Vishapi Katedra Shalem Stuma. And the place where a person sits, Katedra, like cathedral. I don't know what the association is, but it's a term they use for chair in Mishnayos, like for fancy chairs. So the point is that the seat was actually closed.
It's a lid.
Yeah.
It's a toilet with a lid.
Yeah. So whatever went down was then covered up. So mutar l'spalel kenegdam, you'd be allowed to daven outside of that that bathroom also.
Unfortunately, the toilets in hospitals do not have lids.
Yeah. Hmm. So they, because they're worried about transmitting infection when people handle it.
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Okay. So they, I just gave you references to a couple of chubos where the question is discussed. Are our bathrooms considered like the Persian bathrooms? The Minchas Yitzchak, I think, thinks yes. Rav Moshe is not sure. But yeah, it's a fascinating discussion in its own right.
So I just read that the Roman bathrooms, they had the aqueduct water flush through, coming through. Mm-hmm. So it would wash it away from the aqueduct water that would pass through.
It would pass on its own, or you would have to...
No, it would constantly had the aqueduct pushing the water through. So you constantly had water flowing through your
Interesting.
Latrines.
Interesting. Okay. So this really concludes from the healthcare practitioner side, but because these issues come up all the time for patients, I wanted to also mention from the patient side of things, and I brought you some references in the Nishmas Avram, starting with page 101 of the PDF. And I'm just doing this quickly just to cause I think it's worth mentioning, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. 101 of the PDF. This is the issue of colostomy, ileostomy. Mm-hmm. So in this case, the person has something that is piping the stuff outside of themselves. That's the point. So he says, ubenogeya, you see where it's number one, choleim, that's what we're looking at. Choleim in colostomia or ileostomia. Fine. The patient underwent surgery to open up a hole in the belly from which the stuff will come out. So Pasak HaMinchas Yitzchak, the Minchas Yitzchak ruled, Yesh lahatir lo lehispalel, kozman shamako mechusev en magia lo reach ra. He says, as long as it's covered and there's no smell, he can daven. We said that in the spot where the stuff emerges from the body, it's actually a problem, right? We said that that's considered dirtier, and even covering it up doesn't help. When we talked about somebody who has it, emerging from the body in the normal way, you could make that argument. However, ulam, he says, I'll still be lenient. If it's not clear that this is coming out at that time, he doesn't know for sure that it's coming out. Since the idea that soa at that spot where it emerges is taken more seriously is a rabbinic idea, safek derabanan, if you don't know it's coming out, you're fine.
You know it's coming out, it's flowing.
So he says, he's dealing with a case where evidently you don't. That's his metzius. The says, clean him, cover him, and you're fine. And so said Rosh Shlomo Zalman as well. I hear what you're saying, but they're dealing with a different case.
Orifice was defined as the four orifices of the body.
Yeah.
This is not an orifice from the body.
We'll get there. Hang in there. Just give me a second, and you'll see. The ach. Hagon Rav Eliezer Waldenberg Zatzal Posek She'ein Litzoa Shenimtz Bepesach Kolostomia O Ileostomia Din Shel Tzoa B'Mekoma. The Tzitz Eliezer disagreed, as does Sana Block. He says the stuff that's emerging via colostomy or ileostomy is not called Tzoa in its space. And if you look in his tshuva, in the Tzitz Eliezer, you find out the reason why is because we don't observe it being any worse on that spot. It's not smelling any different on that spot. And it's not the natural spot where
it
emerges.
It's covered by the bag.
He's dealing with a separate point. We had said, if you have forget the colostomy case for a second. Normal case, a person has stuff emerge from their body and it's sitting at that spot where it emerges, we said even if it's covered, it's a problem. Even if it's covered, it's a problem. Because tzoa b'mekoma is considered somehow filthier than regular tzoa. So his argument is, number one, we don't observe that to be the case with the tzoa that emerges for a colostomy. Tell me what you want to say about where it emerges for the body on that spot, whatever, that's what Gemara said. But in this case, it's not observably different, number one. And number two, as Dr. Block says, that's not the spot where it emerges from the body. This is something unique. You cut a hole in somebody. That's a different story. The Tzitz Eliezer has more to say. But the bottom line is that Tzitz Eliezer, and he says, Rav Elyashiv as well, argued that that's not an issue here. That's not a problem. So the answer is, colostomy, ileostomy, cover it up. There's no smell. He can daven. That's their statement. What about a catheter that is draining urine into a bag? So it's already 8:25. So I'm just going to say it outside, but I gave you the references where you could see it inside. It's actually right the next section right there, and everybody is lenient there. Some say you don't even need to cover the tube and bag. The tube and the bag are the covering of the urine, right? Like the ashashis. Right, even though you can see through it, so it's already you already have a cover for that, and we don't view the tube or the bag as an avit, the equivalent of a bedpan. Rosh Shlomo Zalman says it's not like a bedpan because it's disposable. So I guess it's not going to be reused and gain that smell over time, I guess, is what he means. Rav Neuwirth says simply because the urine doesn't stay inside. It's like the Persian bathroom. It goes through, and then it's gone. So,
the tube.
He must be talking about the tube. He can't be talking about the bag. He has to be talking about the tube.
Well, you can empty it, so maybe that's what he's saying. You empty it
maybe.
After a certain amount of time.
Maybe. Maybe.
Specifically before you die.
Maybe.
Right, he's not stuck there.
Would do the same
ostensibly, yeah.
Theoretically, it has to be in the flow.
So, right, so
you need to say that 24 hours a day, if you have a colostomy bag, 24 hours a day,
you can watch the one drop drip in, you can watch the drop drip in, and of course you get 20 cc's an hour, and there's going to be a drop every second.
So I'm speculating now, because I've read on this topic, that by control of diet, you might be able to control when stuff comes out.
Not from Foley, it's gravity.
No, but stuff isn't being generated.
You're talking about the colostomy bag.
Yeah.
So I think that you can reduce it. I don't think you can stop it because it's a mucus production also.
You can't. Mm-hmm. It flows.
Interesting. Okay.
Right, you can fast for 24 hours. It's still going to produce something.
Got it.
Is it possible that because it's suddenly, say, a drop at a time, as opposed to regular going to the bathroom,
it's an interesting speculation, for sure.
So little, it's kilu.
It's an interesting speculation. I mean, what I'll say next may relate to that. They raise the question. It's the next item on the list. Meraglam hataftafim. What if there's urine dripping from the person? So the Rama has a tshuva on this. And is someone at the door? I had someone I was supposed to meet at 8:30. So. So the Rama is a tshuva where he says, we are makil, we're lenient if urine is dripping from a person, but he should stop while it's actually emerging. Mm-hmm. That he still wants. And he says, you need clean clothing, covering that spot. And he needs to know that he's not going to need to use this when he's actually starting to daven. That's also going to be a requirement. The last item, just to mention it, I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago also, but it's very dramatic. The Nishmas Avram discussed is a terrible case. You have somebody who has a problem of constant dripping of excrement. It's constantly emerging from him, and he can't stop it, and therefore he's never able to daven. He's never able to learn Torah. So he says, I want an ileostomy. And that way, I will be able to daven again. But as a halacha, we don't go for surgeries that are unnecessary. This is medically unnecessary. So would he be allowed halachically to undergo the surgery? And the answer he's given is yes, because the emotional pain of the fact that he can never daven, he can never learn, is considered a greater risk to him at this point than the risk from the surgery.
I know students who would sign a plastic surgery.
No different than plastic surgery.
That's also something that requires halachic discussion. All right. Okay, so next week, God willing, is Zoom only. All of you who are online, same time, same place. We're going to, after that... That's conflict of interest in the practice of medicine. And then after that, we're going to move on to a very different issue, the issue of the bracha on medical treatment and davening for cholim. So that'll take us very far from what we've been discussing these last 4 weeks.